Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And
this is the winter solstice today, right?
Oh, that's right. And you know, it's going to start getting lighter by a minute every day, starting tomorrow.
The length of day.
That's what I heard. Yeah. Really, I'm looking forward to that. Light is so important, you know? I do miss the sun. I mean, because I get up late because I don't have a job to go to. And I just like, oh my God, I better get out before 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
No, I do other things, but I don't have a paying job. Let's put it that way. All right. Okay.
So we were talking about some of the things from, city council related thing,
right.
and really several things that may be worth mentioning, and we could also review a little bit about the whole term or the last year too.
Yes.
By the way, there are many things. It's been such a difficult 2 years that sometimes you sort of lose track of time of what has happened or has not happened during.
Yeah, mostly it's been during the pandemic. I mean, it happened in March of 2020. I mean, Sumble became mayor in January of 2020, so she's been the pandemic mayor. You know.
That's right. You know, and I suspect she would like to be the mayor who will
if it ain't broke, do a second term
and hopefully emerge from the pandemic as mayor.
Yeah.
And I think she probably has some supporters who would be okay with that. So we'll see what happens on January 3rd at 10 a.m.
Is that the date? And is it now going to be Zoom only?
Nobody has said. Basically, the plan was to have the inaugural on Monday, January 3rd, 10 a.m. And they're always very punctual about this. It's actually in state law. It must be at 10 a.m.
Wow.
And it was supposed to be in person, but only for invited guests, typically family and such, right?
I guess they could still do that.
Yeah, and they could do that. Maybe they will. But
I mean, Tim Toomey had, I mean, although there would be a lot more people than there were last night.
So. You know, but it's certainly not out of the question that there may be a change of plans between now and then.
Uh-huh.
But I suspect they will still try to do it in person.
But it will be Zoom.
Or it'll be Zoom.
Zoom because then everybody
Somebody like me will be persona non grata in the Sullivan Chamber.
Well, what if the counselor invited you?
I suppose, but honestly, I think
you don't want to be around that many people. Rob.
I don't want to.
I wouldn't want to be around that.
No, I respect the desire to keep the population down, I'm not going to force my way into that. You know,
I think it should just be their family. That's my.
Yeah, I think so. So, and then later in the day, I believe it's 6 p.m. is the inauguration of the school committee. Which
so there's no city council meeting that night. No, it's January 10th.
No, right. The city council meeting is the inaugural
January 10th.
Meeting. And the inaugural meeting is they basically do two items of business.
At the 10 a.m. one?
Yeah, at the 10 a.m. item meeting, the inaugural, which is convened by the city clerk as the presiding officer, I might add, because there is no mayor to hold the gavel yet. So the city clerk is the presiding officer.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. And it's all kind of scripted. It's basically you're reading pretty much what state law says you got to read.
Okay.
And then once they've actually sworn everybody in and done all of the you know, raising of hands and placing of hands on sacred books and such.
Yeah.
Then they proceed immediately to the election of the mayor. And you know, I'm pretty sure that'll be, you know, that'll go quick. This is not going to be a 132 ballot mayoral year, I don't believe.
And then they pick the vice mayor also?
Yes, and then they move on to the election of the vice chair of the city council. Technically, under state law, there is no such thing as vice mayor.
So why do we say that?
We just do it because it makes people feel better, I guess. But it doesn't. There's nowhere in the law that says.
I mean, in many ways, I think that. It should be the chairman of the city council or chairperson rather than mayor. Mayor's a confusing term because
you know, except for the role of that a mayor assumes as chair of the school committee under the planning charter.
That's a chair.
The mayor, in terms of the relationship with the city council, is effectively the city council president, and is elected in much the same way as it's done in Boston.
So maybe they should be called president of the city council.
You know, it could be, but it's a tradition, you know, and you know, it's like fiddler on the roof tradition.
I know, but people come into the city, they don't know. I mean, they just
I know
they're elected mayor. Wow.
most of the people in the city say, who's the mayor? They don't even know anyway. So the mayor could be walking down the street in Cambridge and most of the people wouldn't even know who it was, you know. And I don't think that's a bad thing, by the way.
Well, those are the people that don't vote. How many people vote out of how many people could vote? We have 119,000 people. That's counting kids. So how many? 60, 70,000
Well, the registered voters is 70K, yeah.
And then we have 22,000 vote.
Yeah, yeah.
That's nothing. So. And then 14,000 voted for that.
Right.
I mean, that's not a mandate. Right.
But the mayor's the position of a mayor in Cambridge is not the high profile position like Michelle Wu would have or Marty Walsh.
It's a whole different story.
Yeah.
It's a whole different thing.
Yeah. And you know, and they are kind of exalted by design, you know, and they
Michelle Wu was president of the city council though. That's why it was Kim Janey. Kim Janey, which is why she then became mayor.
Acting mayor.
Excuse me. But that, exactly. So they did have that distinction. Okay.
Right.
So maybe it makes it whatever.
Yeah. Okay. You know, now, I mean, there is one important role that the mayor has in addition to being chair of the school committee, which is the mayor makes the appointments of the city council committees. And, you know, there's a certain amount of bargaining that goes on behind the scenes.
Oh, there's a lot
you have my vote, but I would love to chair the ordinance committee or, you know, whatever committee, you know, and.
Interesting. You know, so do you think Alana will still be the vice mayor?
I have no idea. You know, I very hard to say, you know, vice mayor is a sort of a non-position anyway.
Right. But I'm just saying, who is that, a vote or is that an agreement like everything else?
I mean, you do have to elect.
You put your name out. You put your name out there that you want it. Or
you know, in years past, the way it worked, and it may work this way as well this year.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
it would often be the case that the person who was selected as vice mayor was a person who played a pivotal role in delivering the votes to elect the mayor. That often happens.
How would they do that? What do you mean pivotal vote? They're voting for themselves.
Well, if there were five votes to put in a mayor and they all understood amongst the five that, okay, and this is what we're going to do for vice mayor, then that just happens right next as a matter of course. Like it's understood. Yeah, right, exactly. Whatever. I mean, go back on their word, I suppose, but
I see. All right, whatever.
Some people who think that the vice mayor is sort of the mayor in waiting, you know, the person who will be next.
No, they're only there when the mayor can't be
that's
there.
That's never been
the meeting
case. Yeah.
No. In fact, they don't really have any.
And they don't even have to be, you know, if the mayor has to leave the meeting, whatever, unless it's some emergency, then the person who would assume the chair would be the vice mayor.
Right. That's when the only time I ever see that happening.
Right. But if the mayor had to go, mayor could just go to any council and say, could you please take the chair? And that sometimes happens too.
True.
You know, so
but
it's
they
not
can stand
hard
in for that. I mean, but like at events and stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, so we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm pretty sure I know what's going to happen, but you know, we'll see.
All right, so that's January 3rd. Okay.
Yeah. And as I say, the school committee is at 6 o'clock. Normally that would happen over, you know, the media cafeteria or somebody.
But it's going to happen at City Hall. Right?
They're actually doing it at Sullivan Chamber. That's what I saw on the schedule, unless somebody misprinted it. But so that's what's supposed to happen.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow. So those are some of the things that are sort of coming up.
Oh boy. So we're going to have two new city councilors. And I think.
Right. And you know,
two new. Is there only one new?
Just one. Monika Bowman's out, and
Bambi
is in. Yeah, exactly. It's funny because so many people were trying to do this interpretation of the elections. The obvious, the big issues would really turn the tide on this election with this, that, and the other thing. Honestly, all of that's not nonsense. This was basically incumbents just replaced. You know, incumbents were pretty much all back in.
Or spent a lot of money on advertising.
I mean, you know, if there was an open seat, then, you know, then there are certain advantages to try and get the open seat. But basically, Paul Toner will assume Tim.
Oh, I was talking about the school committee. Sorry.
Right. And on the and really, you know, as you know, nobody likes to hear these political realities. But 2 years ago, it was actually Burhan Azim's presence on a slate of candidates who, when he was defeated, helped provide the votes to put Jeeva and Sabrina Wheeler in.
And now it's been reversed.
And then they just reversed, you know, yeah. And, you know, one pretty new face for another pretty new face. And
pretty young face, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Burano will be the youngest city councilor ever inaugurated.
Unbelievable.
In the city of Cambridge, yes. And he's a very polite guy. So, yeah. You know, and my understanding is he's a pretty cooperative guy, too. So,
and hopefully and reasonable.
We could use that right now, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, when I think back about this last council term, mm-hmm. Especially some of what happens in the, you know, in the
police. Yeah.
Right. So the pandemic, as if the pandemic wasn't bad enough. When the murder of George Floyd happened, all hell broke loose all over the place. And really one of the most, and it's great because there should be a reckoning on many, many fronts, but
yes, yeah.
Boy, did some of the bad blood that developed in the city council chamber. I mean, I think it was last summer, you know, some of 2020, where it was almost a shouting match with Branville mm-hmm. Bard was finally had enough of one or two city councilors.
Well, he left, didn't he?
And you know, and Denise Simmons went right back at Quentin Zondervan, you know, and kind of put him in his place. And you know, a lot of
so did Sumble.
Yes, and Sumble has done that multiple times, actually. Have you no manners, right? So there's been this sort of a lingering touch of poison in the water there. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with his politics, but mm-hmm. Buran is a moderating, he's a young kid, but I think he's cooperative, he's respectful, and cordial. And, you know, honestly, we could use a little bit more of that, you know, so I think that could be okay. And by the way, I'm not trying to, you know, yell at Jeeva and Sabrina Wheeler. In many respects, he was very cooperative too, you know, but I think Buran is probably be okay that way, you know. Well, I mean, if they get into some intractable positions in policy differences, we'll see where it goes.
Would you say that Jeevan's crowning achievement was the bike safety ordinance? Is he the one that really propelled that? Because it seems that,
you know,
realizing.
Whether he as an individual, he was, as some people recognize, for those who were supportive of the affordable housing overlay, he provided the sixth vote from where there would have been five prior to his arrival. So he wasn't the mover and shaker on that, but he did provide the sixth vote.
No, but I'm talking about the bike safety ordinance.
There are multiples. You know, it's funny because as I was looking over the last 2 years, which I've done here, I've got basically 9 pages of highlights sitting in front of me here. The bicycle safety ordinance was actually ordained in a previous
2017
term,
right
but then they did these amendments
which created these very rigid schedules
right, and they added certain streets, and they made it so mandatory that in fact it was. And there are many of us still do not believe this actually is legally
okay. But
correct.
Wait, did that all happen after the pandemic or before?
It had during the pandemic.
See, and that's where that
I have a problem with that.
Yeah, because people just didn't know what was going on.
You know, basically, my feeling about it. I mean, there are certain things you need to do because you need to do them right away.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Things that are highly consequential or potentially very controversial. I don't think it's very wise to push those through in the cover of darkness.
No.
And in some respects,
it's just interesting because that did happen.
Yes.
I mean, chances are a lot of people would have been caught off guard anyway, but this is so.
What do they say? You shall reap what you shall have sown.
Yeah.
The way in which that was pushed through and the way in which was sort of forced to be actually executed.
Can that be amended? Can that be looked at?
It's an ordinance. It could be amended. But the problem is there's a political element to this. And
I think the tides are changing on that.
They may be changing. But, you know, I've said it before. I think that there's still a little bit of the fear that you don't want to be the next Craig Kelly, who basically went against a powerful lobby and then found yourself on the outs.
Yeah, but look at last night's meeting. I, I started to watch, you know, the public comment. I thought it was going to be all somewhere. It was all kind of looked for moderate. They were supporting those two policy orders, which did get charter-righted by
Quinn Zondervan, yeah.
Which maybe makes sense because the meeting would have gone at 1 a.m. probably. But maybe 8 people, 9 people that were very pro-bike and stuff. So I'm curious about that. I mean, I think that you're going to have to start listening. These are business owners and people that have lived here for years. These are people that are not just going to be here for a few years or just.
But you know, there is a pretty sad political reality right now, which is that if you've been here for a long time and if you're above a certain age,
there's
a lot of people now who are voting now who basically are the okay boomer mindset.
Right. Oh, you're going to be gone. I mean, who cares?
Yeah,
like we are it now.
Is a schism, and this is just some sort of a dying class of people.
Is true. I mean, there's definitely a demographic
on
this, because you could hear it in the voices. You could hear, except for some people that were, you know, they're just sort of like old hippies, you know, and they don't own cars or whatever. And that's all fine. It's just that they don't represent. I think they're now hearing from that middle part of Cambridge talked about this, that we don't hear much from.
I've been following this stuff for long enough now that I can tell you. Yeah. That once upon a time, if there was any very loud complaint about public process in Cambridge, is that we would process everything to death.
To death, right.
So that if somebody had an idea, then it would take forever to get anything done, because everybody was trying so hard to listen to all points of view and to find consensus and compromise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the tradition. In the last few years, the degree to which people are perfectly happy to run right over the opposition, we may have different points of view on the affordable housing overlay, but there were some perfectly reasonable amendments that were being offered during that, and then they were just pretty much just crammed right down. We will not tolerate dissent. And the bicycle safety ordinance amendments, as they were put forward by McGovern and Sabrina Wheeler, I believe, were the chief.
McGovern put forth those?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's whose name was on it, you know.
That's
but,
true.
But they weren't the only ones, right?
Yeah, no.
But, you know, they were playing to a particular audience, and the notion that, that there may be some people who disagree. And by the way, many of the people you're hearing right now in great, very loud disagreement had no idea any of this happened. I know, that's what I'm saying.
Those are the middle that don't pay attention to all these meetings. And unless you're like have a hardcore issue, you're not paying attention to this stuff.
Whether correct or not, there are a lot of people who treat me like I'm this archivist resource of, you know,
so I have received more
than a few requests from people,
really,
including some of the people you heard in public comment who said,
okay,
could you tell me when they actually did that amendment and who voted for it and who sponsored it? They didn't know, you know, I mean, it's obvious that they're asking me about things. And then, and it's, by the way, it's on my website too. You know, they could find it easily enough. But they didn't know. They didn't know it then. They didn't know it until basically the Steins started popping up. You could argue, well, they should have known. Yeah. That just doesn't fly for me. You know.
You know, one of these public commenters, his name was George, and he was very against the policy. And then at the end, he said he really supports Jivan's, you know, Sabrina Wheeler. That's where I got he really pushed this. And then at the end, he said, I live in Somerville.
I know the guy you're talking about.
Oh, really?
Anyway, it's a pretty broken politic. I wonder sometimes how we get out of this, because honestly, not that I was ever a great fan of processing things to death, but if you give me a choice between basically the sort of the ram it through and just torpedo the opposition mindset that we seem to be in right now versus process it to death and maybe you get half a loaf rather than a whole loaf, I will take the old way. I prefer the old way.
Which you know, is process it to death.
I'd rather process it some, and you know, and if it takes longer to get something done, but everybody would be okay with it.
So, does that segue into the campaign finance ordinance that got
there? Yeah. So we should probably mention that. So that's something that actually was introduced. Well, it was really introduced back in 2014 or 15.
Oh, yeah, I know. Carlone keeps
bringing Dennis Carlone and Nadine Mazin were sort of big proponents of various, and there were different iterations of it.
Public financing, all this stuff,
Yeah, the latest version of a campaign finance limits proposal actually dates to about 14 months ago in October of 2020. Right. You could argue, well, right in the midst of the pandemic, but honestly, we were a lot less fearful. The pandemic felt like it was a little lifting then, you know.
True,
yeah. So I think that was just basically the realization of a campaign that Dennis Carlone has been basically pushing for a long time. And, you know,
we got to stop.
There was no hidden agenda about this. This is something that he had his supporters.
Or anybody having any business before the council. Who's going to investigate all that?
So I think what they did this past time is they basically lifted the language from an ordinance that Somerville had passed a couple of years ago.
But they modified it.
Yeah, they basically were putting in other restrictions, which made it a little more iffy as to whether you could just do it by a straight ordinance. And that's what the city solicitor said. Right. But, you know, it's not at all clear. You didn't have to read too much between the lines of Nancy Glow, the city solicitor, basically saying that she had some serious doubts that Somerville's ordinance was legal. And that
but it's been around for many years and hasn't been challenged.
It's not been many years, but it hasn't been challenged. And, you know, as they say,
no one takes developer money.
No whistle, no foul, right?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, as long as everybody was willing to abide by it, you can call it an ordinance or you can call it, you know, sort of a moral authority statement or whatever. But people have been abiding by it. And, you know, and if somebody went over the limit, they've been giving donations back.
That's right.
So it's sort of working. Now, if somebody wants to challenge it, maybe they could challenge it and throw it out. But I'll bet you people would still abide by it in Somerville because it's becoming a bit of a tradition.
You know, it only applies to upzoning, but, you know, McGovern's point about downzoning and petitions that come before the council and those people that might give money to councillors that support their positions. How is that going to influence?
I got to say, though, Councillor McGovern is the person who took the most money by far from those sources.
I know, but was it $10,000?
And I love her to death, but Denise Simmons comes in a close second. And
I know, it's $12,000, $15,000.
Listen, I am not of the opinion that there's a whole lot of influence buying going on here. And to me, I wasn't in favor of this ordinance what is the ordinance? Basically, they're putting a limit of $200
on real estate developer, anyone having business before.
Yeah.
The city.
Right. There are going to be a few people, like if you happen to be a lawyer who happens to have done work.
Well, is that an affiliate? Didn't they get rid of the affiliate language or did they not?
But let me tell you, there are a lot of lawyers working for Goulston Stores who are working hand in hand with developers who are contributing $500 to $1,000 to quite a few counselors this time around. So,
Draw the line? Yeah, but I think
I don't know that you really can. So that's why for me, they passed it, they ordained it, they got seven votes to ordain it in the end. There was a last minute attempt to derail it. I think Vice Mayor Mallon basically put in an amendment to basically say this will only go in effect after a home rule petition is approved by the legislature and signed by the governor. And that amendment failed on a 4-5 vote.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh, well, okay. And I'm absolutely certain that amendment was in there, not just because it was the advice of the city solicitor, because they knew that it was a good likelihood that the home rule amendment would not be approved. And this was a nice polite way of not having this go into effect.
Yeah.
All right. But in the end, that didn't happen. So it went through, it had the votes. It's now an ordinance and we'll see how it plays out. Will somebody challenge it? Probably not, actually. In my opinion, probably not.
Why?
Because if you actually look at the amount of money coming from developers in the last few years,
well, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't seem to amount to that much.
it's a lot less than it used to be.
Yeah.
But also
the percentage of what people are taking. So it's 20%. I don't see that as a big deal when I see other people giving themselves, $15,000.
Actually, the way I look at it this way is, I mean, it's funny, these like two-edged things. If you're a candidate who's been running on your purity, I wouldn't take a dirty dollar from anybody. And now nobody's allowed to, you can't run on that anymore because nobody's allowed to take out money. Right. Okay. So you've just lost your campaign.
Well, who's to say, what money is dirt? Where do these people giving $1,000 donations? They probably have portfolios, and I'm not criticizing. I have stuff that's got probably oil in it and stuff. I'm not pure.
I know. Listen,
are we going to start looking at their portfolios to see, wait a minute, we took $1,000, but where is your money coming from?
I think that's fundamentally insane.
I know.
I don't know that the city solicitor explicitly expressed those concerns, but I think you could kind of read it anyway.
But that's really, where do you draw the line? Money is money. So, anyone owning property, anyone owning a portfolio.
There's so much gray area here.
Either you go live off the grid or not.
And who's going to adjudicate this?
Well, exactly.
Is the city clerk going to do it? Is the Board of Election Commissioners going to decide who's dirty money and who isn't? I'm all for maximal disclosure. And if people want to vote for somebody who's taking money from this source or that source, let them do it.
It's just that $10,000 or that $12,000 or whatever they take, they just won't take it. So you know what? We're still going to raise money other places.
The money will come. There's enough money around.
It's a lot to do about nothing. And this whole thing about perception that it's a, give me a break. I don't have that perception.
Well,
I don't know who these people are.
But
they spoke at public comment. You got
to
pass
it. Matters
this.
To some voters.
I know. Some voters.
That's right. So now
the ones that they hear from a lot.
Now those voters will have to use some other criteria for deciding who they think is wonderful.
Right. Well, let's just keep track of all these donations.
I do it all the time.
I know. Yeah. Let's just see. I'm going to start looking up their stock portfolio.
Anyway, I think we're just about out of time. But
oh, we are. Okay.
We'll be back in the new year. See you there.
All right. Cambridge. Oh, my God. I ranted away.